it's a Friday and the weekend is about to commence. Which
no, it's not any Friday. It's a gold medal Friday.
We'll get to that a little bit later on.
Come on. It's a gold medal Friday.
Well, we'll talk about it after the conversation.
God, it's electric.
Well, yeah, I get it. I feel the same way. But we'll talk about it later. We'll have more time.
Okay.
Let's get to the guests.
Okay.
Oh, I mean, you're the one who arranged for a hockey show on the
the producer.
The soccer.
Wait. Oh, yes. Because you obviously knew all week that.
Well, you know my great love affair with footy.
I do.
I was going to say it's a rarity when great players get traded. But of course, after Gretzky, I guess anything is possible. Mm-hmm. But it's still rare. Teams generally try and keep their great players. The Buffalo Sabres have a player who, well, certainly is their best player, and I guess one of the best players in the National Hockey League, and seemingly are prepared to trade him.
Well, and the team and the player are at such loggerheads on so many issues, Bob. That's the bigger thing.
Nonetheless, at the core of it is, he's a valuable talent.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that the decision to potentially move him is the wrong decision. Maybe you can argue it's the right decision, given that the team has had no success while he has had individual success. But that's a topic we may get into. A couple of hockey pucks. Scott Burnside and Mike Harrington will join us. Burnside from Atlanta, Georgia, and Harrington from Buffalo, New York.
The epicenter of hockey today.
All right. Back after these messages. So here we are in August.
Yeah.
It's hot.
Really hot.
The sun's been shining for a good period of time here in the Big Smoke. And no hockey games are being played, which is almost surprising given what's happened the last couple of years.
No hockey in August? We were smack in the middle of the playoffs last year, Bob.
That's what I'm saying. nonetheless, the clock never stops and the news continues to prevail. And is Eichel the biggest story right now in hockey?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd say. And there's no conclusion to that. So let's talk about it. Our pals Scott Burnside and Mike Harrington join us from Atlanta and Buffalo, respectively. Burnside, you still in Atlanta?
It's hot here, but it's hot here almost all the time.
I was going to say, it's a hockey hotbed.
Scott. Yeah. It's a wet heat, too. So that's all there is to it.
So you have no sympathy for the people at the Olympics in Tokyo where it's the same, 44 and humid.
I'm full of empathy for a lot of people, so I'm open.
Well, when you go out for your 10-mile jog later today, sweating profusely, we'll be thinking of you. I suspect there's not much chance of that happening, but nonetheless. The Eichel story is one with a lot of levels. Let me start here, and I'll throw this at Harrington first, but Brinson, I want you to jump in on this too. Let's start with this. The expectations of Eichel when he was drafted were very high. I was going to say pretty high, but they were very high. He's number two pick overall. Has he underperformed? Has he been a disappointment? Or is he only perhaps a disappointment by comparison to the guy who went number one, who's the best player in the game? Mike, to you.
Yeah, that's all it is, Bob. He's not Connor McDavid. Is he a disappointment? The team has been a disappointment. He hasn't been. I mean, you look at 2019-20, 36 goals, 78 points in a shortened season. He finished eighth in the Hart Trophy balloting ahead of a lot of big names. He had started to develop really into the elite kind of top 10 player everybody thought he'd be. He was a 200-foot center. That was his best season. The problem has been all the building around him. I was the most ardent anti-tanker in Buffalo, probably. The fact of the matter, though, is it should have worked. They screwed it up by not properly building the team around him. He was the top player. He became an all-star. He became an elite player. Is he a disappointment? No. The results around him have been the disappointment.
Scotty?
Yeah, to me, it's such a layered kind of thing with Jack and the Sabres. And as Mike points out, is, you know, this is an institutional failing for that team. But, you know, I think the player has to bear some of that responsibility as well. And I mean, listen, you know, I'm not going to divert this conversation into whether Connor McDavid has done a great job in Edmonton or not. But how many playoff rounds has Connor McDavid won in his career?
Well, that's the point,
I believe. Right. And there's a man who was part of a team that just got swept out of the playoffs by a Winnipeg Jets team that really shouldn't have swept them. So, you know, it's degrees of, can you imagine the comparisons? Let's say Connor McDavid had won a Stanley Cup already or been to a final. I mean, it would look even worse than it does now. But, and I think you have to ask yourself, well, has Jack Eichel been, you know, has he made the players around him better that were put into that lineup? Has he, you know, my sense, I know talking to him at the player tour seemed like 8 million years ago, but it must have been before the start of the 18-19 season. But, you know, the idea that he was, you know, he was committed to helping Rasmus Dahlin and making sure that he had, you know, that he was under his wing in some ways, taking him to the rink. And like it sounded like he had his heart in the right spot. But we're at a point now where you have a franchise player that the team can't wait to get rid of, but also can't get rid of. So it is mind-boggling that we've come to this point with this player and this franchise.
Okay, so Mike, that's the key question. Why on this Friday is Jack Eichel still a Buffalo Sabre?
Well, first I want to say, Scotty, nothing's mind-boggling when it comes to the Buffalo Sabres. The way this has gone the last 10 years, I should say I'm not surprised. I'm not even surprised by this. But what happened here, John, you know, it's hard for me in these spots to really ever support the team. 99% of the time, I'm always going to be in favor of the player. This particular situation is very dicey. I don't know what team in the NHL would allow Jack Eichel to have a neck surgery that's never been done on an NHL player. I think all these teams kind of think the same way. And I think that's the biggest issue here. Keep in mind, both sides agree Jack Eichel needs neck surgery. The argument is over what kind of surgery he can have. Can he have a standard fusion surgery, which is what the Sabres want? Can he have artificial disc replacement surgery, which is what he wants? So that's the real issue here. They've come to loggerheads anyway. Jack was frustrated anyway. If Jack was healthy right now and had never gotten hurt this year, I think Jack would be wanting a trade out of here anyway. But the surgery is just compounding things, and it's just turning into this ugly disaster. And, you know, like Scotty said, like you said, John, now they're in a situation where what team is going to give them the kind of package they want to trade Jack Eichel and not have Ryan O'Reilly 2.0 disaster looming over their organization for multiple years?
So let me ask both of you. Jack's agent, Peter Fish, came out late last week with a press release.
At 9:45 on a Friday night. Who does that at 9:45 on a Friday night?
Well, somebody who went to happy hour? I'm not sure. So Peter Fish, his agent, comes out with a release detailing, in their opinion, what has gone on and what is going on. Was that the right thing to do, Mike?
No. Again, now most people in this town think the Sabres have a better case than Jack does. I think that was a case where they thought he was getting traded before the draft. He didn't. They thought he was getting traded before free agency. He didn't. And either Jack or Jack's family freaked out and said to the agent, do something, say something. So they put out this lame statement about, you know, he's holding back and this isn't working and whatever. The Sabres had to trade Ristolainen and Reinhart because they were about to lose control of the contracts going into the last year. Reinhart was an RFA. The Sabres are like, hey, you got an 8-year, $80 million deal. We got 5 years left. Mm-hmm. Your no moving doesn't even kick in for another year. The Sabres don't have that kind of pressure right now. Jack wants to get a trade. Fine. You get a trade when we get what we want from people. And right now they're not getting what they want. And I don't know where it ends. Everybody's kind of stuck, but I don't care. The agents don't like it. He has a contract. The Sabres don't have to trade him.
I got to tell you, it's funny. Pierre LeBrun and I have had this conversation, and I've had it with other people, you know, in recent weeks and months even, I guess. But, and I seem to be the only one who is like, Well, why? The prevailing thought, and maybe Mike, you feel the same way. The feeling is he can't come back to Buffalo. And I say, well, why not? He's got a new coach. Don Granato's a heck of a guy. I know Jack didn't play for him because he was hurt already, but Don Granato's a heck of a guy. Team performed better than it had under Don Granato. I think there's a potential for there to, you know, to something to coalesce and move the needle a little bit with that team. And as Mike points out, he's got 5 years left at $10 million a year. And it seems obvious that Kevin Adams, and maybe this is a complete directive from ownership, is that if you've got to trade him, you've got to get a boatload of assets. And so we're talking 3 or 4 first round picks. And so I mean by that prospects who are first round picks on the verge of being everyday top NHL players or top young NHL players, real first round picks. I know what some of the asks have been, and it's enormous. Plus then, as Mike has pointed out, I don't know what's going to happen with the surgery, what works, you know, how is the health of this $50 million player? And I guess what I don't understand is that once it became clear teams were not going to line up and pay the ransom for this player whose future is in doubt in some ways because of his health, why not just close the door and say, you know what? We control this. And if Jack wants out, he'll come here. He'll play like crazy. His trade value will go up. He'll prove, we'll come to an agreement. He'll prove that he's healthy. And then we'll revisit this at trade deadline or next summer before the draft or whatever. I don't know why they haven't come to that point, because right now, I mean, we're still talking about it here in the end of the first week of August, mm-hmm. and it's not going away. I don't understand why the Sabres just don't say, you know what? He's going to come here and he's our captain and he's going to play here. And we're going to see what happens after that. But we're not going to talk about trading anymore because clearly they're not getting what they want.
Mike, do you have any sense that the teams that have knocked on the door to Kevin Adams have had a chance to look at the medical records?
No, I don't get a lot of sense of that at all. I think that's one of the issues, that they haven't been real open with that. I think part of it is they don't feel they've gotten real legitimate offers. They feel they've gotten undersold. They're trying to trade the 36-goal Jack Eichel, who finished 8th in the Hart Trophy balloting, and everybody else is trying to acquire the 2-goal Jack Eichel, who didn't play after March and needs neck surgery. So that's the issue here, and what Scotty says is true. I mean, I think they feel it's be difficult to bring him back into their locker room. It could be like a Pierre-Luc Dubois situation in Columbus, where it'll just be ugly and Jack will pout and poison the room. But part of me says, hey, if you want out of here, we'll get you out of here. You have to establish your value again and show people you're Jack Eichel, and then people will pay up and we'll get you out of here. It's a hard problem to have.
So it's the key thing, and Scotty brought it up. If Jack Eichel skated out opening night that second week of October at the arena in Buffalo, what would the fan reaction be?
Could I don't know. Be. Which react? What if Kevin Adams skated out to center ice? What would the reaction?
Well,
which,
like Kevin's
better reaction.
Scotty, like Kevin's career, nobody would notice.
Oh, that's a hard. I've got all kinds of time for Kevin Adams.
I know you do. I'm just.
He did win a cup. You can never underestimate a guy who is a grit guy who wins a cup like he did in Carolina. But yeah, you wonder right now. I think if Jack skated out on the ice, it would be a very 50-50 reaction. He'd get a lot of applause and he'd get a lot of boos in Buffalo.
Well, right? I wonder what the relevance of that question is in terms of, like, if I'm the general manager of the Buffalo Sabres, I don't give a crap what the fans say.
Don't listen.
As dumb as a lot of general managers are, almost all fans are dumb and dumber than general managers.
Yeah, but I was not debating from a position where Kevin Adams comes from, but, you know, ownership thinks differently than managers do. Ownership needs to try to sell tickets. The question becomes, is Jack Eichel as a Buffalo Sabre, does he sell tickets?
Well, but at the end of the day, winning sells tickets. I know we talk a lot about this, about the notion that a star player sells tickets. And there's some validity to that. But that validity, I think, is much greater when that player is on the road and going to a city where they don't get an opportunity to see him. And I'm talking about truly great players. And I don't think Eichel is one of them. I think McDavid is on the verge of being that guy. Crosby has been that guy. Gretzky certainly has been that guy. But you could probably count them in the last 20 years on one hand, the number of people that actually sell tickets. And I'm not talking about the theoretical. I'm talking about the actual reality. No,
my point is, Bob, is I believe Eichel did sell tickets in Buffalo.
And well, because there was optimism about his ability to turn the franchise around, which is a totally different question that we haven't even begun to address. Well, let's get to that. But I want to go back to something Harrington said a little bit earlier. This confliction between the player and the team on what kind of neck surgery he is going to have or should have. So we've all worked for employers. At least one of us continues to work for an employer. If I've got a problem, and let's say, so I'm a broadcaster, so I got a throat problem. I go see a doctor who tells me this is the kind of procedure I want you to have. And the company I'm working for says, no, we want you to have this other procedure. Well, my response to that is, bite me. You don't have a say in this. This is my choice. It is not yours. I work for you, but under the terms of my contract, am I obligated to follow the medical procedure that you recommend? What's the answer to that, Harrington?
Yes, he is. It's an amendment in the CBA.
That's right.
July of 2020 that the Players Association signed as part of the extension that the players must follow the medical advice of the team. They can go out and get a second opinion, and that's what Jack did when he went to Colorado. But ultimately, the second opinion then is taken under consideration. It's right there in black and white by the team doctors. It's taken under consideration, and they make the determination. So Jack, at his press conference, was even asked the same question, Bob. He was said, it's your body, your choice, right? And his answer, he knew. He even said, that's not how it works. And as bizarre as that sounds, it's right in the
CBA. Well, it is bizarre. And why in the name of the baby Jesus, Burnside, would the PA cave to that notion?
Well, I don't even know why it's a surprise to you. Jack Eichel belongs to the Buffalo Sabres, and whether we like it or not, and whether he likes it or not, he is an asset that they have spent millions of dollars to. How many losses? What was the cost to lose all those games to Jack Eichel? But no, to draft and develop a player, and especially a high-end player, it's a millions of dollars investment. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it should be any surprise at all that the team, and whether they're right or wrong, whether they have chosen an ill-advised path or not, I have no idea which of these surgeries. In fact, I know someone, you know, who looked at, you know, in both these options. And it does seem like, you know, the replacement surgery has some merit. And my sense is the reason that the agents talked about it is that the recovery time may be even quicker than people sort of imagine. I think the idea is, hey, this wouldn't take as long. If you trade for him now, he could be back in your lineup sooner than later. But my point is that he belongs to the team, and the team has every right, as far as I'm concerned, to make those kinds of decisions. And if they can't come to some agreement, hey, I prefer to do it this way. Okay, well, let's, you know, if you can't come to that agreement, you know, if he's a UFA, it's a moot point, right? Does whatever he wants because he's not beholden to anyone but himself. Right now, he's the Buffalo Sabres property. I get zero problem with the team holding out, even if it's wrongheaded, it's right. Their responsibility.
I couldn't disagree with you more, but I mean, that's fair. You know, I mean,
from a legal perspective, Bob, I mean, the players have sold this. They sold this right to get something back out of the CBA.
And that's what I said, John. I'm shocked that the PA would allow this to happen. I mean,
this is relatively new when you think that it wasn't. I think it was just the previous CBA where players were allowed to go outside and get a second opinion. I mean, there was a point early, not that long ago, where it was whatever the team doctor prescribed, and that was it. There were no other options.
Well, but I mean, we're smarter than we used to be. I assume we've all seen the movie Any Given Sunday, and the theme of that movie, of course, is the corrupt doctor who tells everybody, you know, take this pill, take this shot, you'll be fine. And has only regard for next week's game and no regard for the health of the player.
And I think that world has changed.
Well, and this is different.
Yeah,
though.
It's much worse now. Now you got to follow the team doctor.
But this is completely different, right? The Sabres doctors aren't saying, here, try these leeches because no, that's
right.
Use the leeches because that's a good thing. And they're the ones, they're not promoting experimental surgery, right? Like to your point, Bob, like I'd be all on board with you if they were saying, hey, we think you, you know, try something that, you know, we saw a YouTube video and see if that works so you can get back on the ice. In fact, it's almost the exact opposite where.
Well, I have a long history of playing a lawyer on radio. I don't have any history of playing a doctor on radio, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I know more than the doctors know. What I do know is that I wouldn't trust a team doctor as far as I could spit, because I know what the team's agenda is. Yeah. I pay $10 million a year for this guy. I want him on the ice. I want him on the ice as fast as I can. And, you know, if he keels over and dies 1 minute after his contract is over, great. Better than 1 minute before.
But Bob, the surgery the Sabres want him to have, he would actually be on the ice. It would take longer for him to get back on the ice than the surgery Jack wants to have. The issue is the team surgery is the standard one that would be performed in this situation. And the surgery Jack wants has never been performed on an NHL player. And that's why the team just won't go for it.
Well, okay. All right. Look, and I don't pretend again. I can't argue that point with you, Harrington. I mean, I don't know anything about these two procedures, and I'm not going to pretend to. What I'm saying is that as an individual who is nothing more than an employee, I would object to the notion of being told what to do with my body and my future and my health for the 40 years or so I'm going to be alive after playing. And I'm sure as crap not going to rely on a doctor employed by the team to make that decision. Because whether it's in this case or a bunch of other minor cases, you know what their agenda is. They know who's signing their check. They know who to listen to.
Yeah, but he signed the contract. He signed his 8-year, $80 million contract.
I have no objection to that. My objection is
the contract, and those were the terms of the contract. You have to follow them.
Well, essentially, no, because according to you guys, the PA and the league amended the players' contracts a year ago, correct?
July of 2020, right. But I mean, you know,
so he didn't sign a deal that had that in there.
If you're part of the group and that's what you play under, you have to live with the terms of it.
Then get a new group.
Well, you have to get a new group. But Jack Eichel and Jack Eichel's agents can't go rogue. That's really the bottom line here. They want to go rogue, and they can't go rogue because he's under contract. Like you said earlier, if he was an unrestricted free agent, he could do what he wanted because he wouldn't be under terms of contract to anybody. He's under terms of contract to the Buffalo Sabres for 5 years. He can't do whatever he wants. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah, well, I went rogue a lot of years ago, so I'm sympathetic to anybody who tries to defy the odds.
Sports radio, sports TV, broadcasting is such a team sport anyway. So
when did that start?
Exactly.
All right.
It's a mess, though. Would you really think this would have happened to any franchise other than the Buffalo Sabres?
Probably not. No.
The last 10 years. Whoa, it's just really hard to believe.
I hope, Mike, you have kept notes. I hope the book is going to be a bestseller, even in Western New York, because it is something, isn't it?
You know, it'd be nice if one of these years they could win something and then you could kind of bring all this chaos up to the finally they got through and they broke through and had the winning season. It's just, you know, every time you say to yourself, well, this is as low as the Buffalo Sabres can get, they find a lower point.
Well, I want to take a break here, but I want to focus on that. I got a question. We'll do it after this break, back after these messages. A somewhat heated conversation. It's McCowan, it's Shannon, it's Burnside and Harrington all talking about this. So you three guys seem, well, mostly Shannon and Harrington are portraying the Buffalo Sabres as the epitome of the worst franchise in all of sports. Are they? Who's a worse franchise? The Pittsburgh Pirates or the Buffalo Sabres? And I've only picked one other one.
Boy, it's a hard one to think of. I mean, right now, when you look at consecutive years out of the playoffs, the leader in the clubhouse right now is the Seattle Mariners, who have not made it since their 116-win season of 2001. Yeah. But they're having a nice year. They're not the worst franchise in professional sports. The Sabres would be up there. The Pirates would be one I would bring up.
Didn't the Pirates go 24 years without making the playoffs?
Yes,
they did before they got in 2013. Yeah. The Sacramento Kings of the NBA are on a terrible run right now, really in irrelevance. But in terms of chaos, the Buffalo Sabres have had more chaos, I think, over these last 10 years with coaching firings, GM firings, 2 years of tanking, which was just a hot button issue in town for those 2 years, and just losing upon losing. And now, you know, a bad COVID outbreak. They of course get the bad COVID outbreak before Vancouver's. And now you're looking at the guy you tanked for, who you got with the number two pick, who you gave him $80 million, suddenly can't stand to be here anymore and wants out. That's a pretty low bar for the Buffalo Sabres in terms of other teams in professional sports.
Yeah. Well, and it depends like what's your measuring stick. And for me, you know, I mean, Mike's there every day, but I covered playoff series in Buffalo. I've been to that community and, you know, covered that team when they were cresting and, you know, this close to, you know, winning a Stanley Cup. You go back to the Eastern Conference final game 7 in 06. And you think about, you know, Briere and Drury and sure. Campbell, and you think about the teams that they had there and the potential. I mean, and I'm not even talking the, you know, sort of the even greater history, but what has that team given to that fan base, and a fan base that was loyal and honest and intelligent, and, you know, the connection there was real. Like what has happened there? And to me, that's when you say what's the worst franchise, it's which fan base has been kicked around, you know, the most. And it's hard to imagine another team whose fan base has suffered through what the Buffalo Sabres have gone through. And that's a community that deserves a lot more. And maybe they'll get it now, right? I mean, you know, but we're still, I mean, Mike, what are we talking? I mean, best case scenario, whatever happens to Eichel, and what are we, 3 or 4 years before this team, you know, the next wave, all things being equal, that they challenge for a playoff spot and can, you know, you can start to forget the negativity. I mean, 3 or 4 years earliest, I don't know.
And I mean, looking at it, this would be coming up year 11 out of the playoffs, which would set the all-time record in the NHL. And the earliest would probably be year 12, and that's the outside. And the other thing, you look at the division. I mean, good Lord, Tampa Bay, Florida, Boston, Toronto, maybe Montreal, I think, is going to take a step back here. But look at the way Ottawa and Detroit are coming.
Yeah.
It's a grind. It's a grind to see how the Buffalo Sabres are going to climb, even with the tremendous amount of young talent they have. And they have a lot of top draft picks on the team now and coming in. And Owen Power will be here next year for sure. They're going to have a lot of young players here who are really highly accomplished and top picks. They have to meld them together as a team, and the fans are waiting. And you're right. The issue is, Bob, the fans have stuck through this. They're not playing in front of 6,000 people in their building. It's not when Carolina was terrible. It's not Arizona. It's not Florida. They have had a lot of people in the building still through the losing. Will they this year? I don't know. But these fans have stuck through 10 years of this.
You know, you talk about the highlights of this franchise. I mean, I remember sitting in the atrium the day that Terry Pegula bought the team.
Sure.
And that was going to be a highlight. And that was, you know, the reintroduction of the greats of the Buffalo Sabres and Gilbert Perreault and Terry almost crying because, you know, it was his idol. And then he said, if I need to spend money, I'll just drill another well. Well, you know, this is the symbiosis between the Pegula successes ownership and the Sabres on the ice. There's something there that makes you wonder what is the next step between ownership and owning the team, I think. Don't you, Mike?
Sure. And I mean, they've spent money. There's no question. He's spent to the cap a lot of the time. The issue is they have spent the wrong money. Ville Leino. Hello, Ville Leino, for starters.
Jeff Skinner.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Skinner.
You it's know, been you over and over again. We can run down a whole long list of
the
names.
The issue here is simply now spend the right money. You don't need to spend to the cap. Spend the right money. And they have a lot of young players are going to have to pay in the future, and they're going to have to figure out how to do it. But to say ownership hasn't spent money, hasn't been the issue. There's never been a time where they're being accused of some of the things that Tom Dundon and Carolina is being accused of right now. So it's just they haven't figured out how to do it. They haven't had any consistent philosophy. They keep firing coaches and GMs, and the result is what you see.
I want to spin this a little bit differently here before we let you guys go, and I'm really intrigued by your perception of this. This is something that has come to me in rather recent times, and it's appropriate that we bring it up because we're talking about principally about Eichel here. Would you guys say that the three most talented, prominent, exciting young players in the game today, and I don't want to exclude anybody, but on that list would be, of a short list, would be Eichel, McDavid, and Matthews. Mm-hmm. Would there be anybody else that would be in that category?
I think Cale Makar would probably edge himself into that discussion. And frankly, I would have Cale Makar ahead of Jack Eichel at this stage.
Okay. But here's what's intriguing about those three. Combined about 20 years, I don't know, in the NHL. One playoff series victory.
Yeah.
one.
But that speaks to something, Bob, we hammer home here every time we talk about the game. It is such a it is the greatest team sport that's played in North America.
Well, but that's fine, and that's your positive way of spinning it. What I'm trying to do is assess, is way too much emphasis placed on, from an attention standpoint, and maybe even from a drafting standpoint, and I don't even know how to mitigate this, but on one guy.
Absolutely.
In other words, one guy can't change anything.
And LeBron plays 40 minutes a night. You know, NBA players play 40 minutes a night. In hockey, the greatest player plays a little more than a third of the game. McDavid will play 22 minutes. Crosby will play 23 minutes. It's a 60-minute game. You can't put a guy out there for 40 minutes to dominate. He doesn't get his five at-bats in baseball and get a hit all the time. Hockey isn't like that, and that's why the 21st century attention on the draft and all these draft nicks, and this guy's going to save the team. He can't save the team by himself because he only plays a third of the game.
Right. Well, and to Mike's point earlier about the history of the Buffalo Sabres, and it's the history of every struggling franchise. It's the history of the Arizona Coyotes. It's the history of almost every bottom feeding club is that, you have to take advantage of those moments when you are picking one, two, three, whatever it is, and you hope that it's a massive draft like 2003 or whatever it is. But then if you don't have the correct development staff, if you don't have scouts who are able to find players in the third and fourth round, and that forces you to spend on free agents, if you don't have coaches at the AHL level that are attuned with what the NHL club wants in terms of development, and then if you don't have the structure at the NHL level, in which young players can come and grow and learn, well, then you are pooched, right? Then it doesn't matter whether you have Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid, but it does matter if you are the Pittsburgh Penguins and you have Sidney Crosby, and it took a long time in Washington, but if you have Alex Ovechkin in Washington and you think about the, year after year going to the playoffs, I think they missed once maybe, in Ovi's first, from 05-06. Mm-hmm. But you have to have the whole package. But I don't think you can discount the importance of a player drafted at the top who has generational skills. And then if you build around him properly, well, yeah. I mean, Chicago, now they had Toews and Kane who came in the same year. But, yes, there was a great supporting cast. But that's Patrick Kane, who's still, was a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer. You have to do it all right. You can't just say we get the first pick and move on. But you have to have the structure in place. And if you don't have that, then you are screwed.
Well, the Leafs got Marner and Matthews, both very talented players, and have had no success with it. And to Harrington's point earlier about time spent on the ice, most number one draft choices are goal scorers. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. The vast majority are goal scorers. If you're going to go by time spent on the ice, which I'm not objecting to, your number one choice should be a goaltender, assuming you need one. And your number two choice should be a defenseman who will play 40 minutes a night.
Well, look at the contracts. Look at the contracts that defensemen have signed this summer alone.
Yeah.
reinforcing exactly what you said from a defenseman perspective, Bob. When you think about the $9 million D-men, that within 2 years we're going to be talking about a regular occurrence of $10 million defenseman. That's where the growth of the game is. So if you have a four-year-old child getting into hockey, make sure there are a left shooting or a right shooting defenseman and you're okay.
Well, I've opined this for years that I've thought hockey has made an overt priority on high skilled goal scorers, for lack of a better term.
Well, I think the whole concept of strength down the middle, goaltending, defense, center. That's where most, if you sit with a scout,
well, that's theoretical because.
But that's what most people are endeavoring to do. The problem is
goaltenders almost never drafted in the first half of the first round?
Oh, Bob, because we've been through this in a million times. Is because they take time to. They're like a fine wine. They need to age. It, you know, give me the story of an 18-year-old goaltender that has been successful and has lasted a long period of time. If you give me two, I can give you 10 that were failures. That's the reality of
one.
It.
I only
Marc-Andre
got
Fleury. Marc-Andre Fleury.
Well, but Marc-Andre Fleury, let's not forget, you know, Hall of Famer for sure. But there was a period of time after they won the Cup in 2009, and there were three or four playoff years in a row where Marc-Andre Fleury was not particularly good, and fans wanted him gone from Pittsburgh. And, you know, I spent some time with Spencer Knight recently, and, you know, what a great story. It's going to be fascinating what happens with Spencer Knight and Sergei Bobrovsky in Florida, where I think the Panthers are, frankly, really close. But you're right, John. I mean, you can't, you know, the expectation, it's okay to expect a certain amount from a 19-year-old Connor McDavid. Can you expect the same level of proficiency and excellence of a 19-year-old Spencer Knight? I don't know that you can. And history shows, as John points out, that it does take goaltenders longer. You know, Carey Price is a great example. At one point, the Habs had to roll the dice. Jaroslav Halak, Carey Price, what do we do? I don't know.
You know, I sit here and I kind of laugh because, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury had some struggles in the playoffs, and the years Ovechkin just couldn't get it done, and Austin Matthews and the Leafs haven't done anything. They're in the playoffs. Look what I've been dealing with for 10 years here.
By the way, is there a chance you're one of the starting goalies for the Sabres this year?
Wow.
You're in the right age range.
I can't go to my left anymore, but I mean, you know, we're seeing the pendulum swing. You know, you think back when Chicago won the Cup with Antti Niemi, people started saying, well, you can win the Cup with any goalie. You got to build your team. The goalie's not important.
That's a crock of shit.
We saw that for a while, but now it's swung back. It's swung, you know, you had Matt Murray now. You saw what Binnington did. You see what Vasilevskiy's done. You saw what Jonathan Quick did. And now we know again, you got to have the goalie. If you can't stop the puck, you have no shot to go deep in the playoffs. We saw what happened this year. I think Pittsburgh had a real shot this year. Tristan Jarry just completely fell apart, and they were done. I think teams got away at times from thinking they had to develop goalies and get goalies. They could win with anybody, and it's not that way anymore. I think we're going back to the high-priced defensemen. We're going to go back to the high-priced goalies, not Sergei Bobrovsky. And I think it goes back the other way. I think we're not going to see – you got to have that top goal scorer right away at the top of the draft all the time. I mean, look at number one this year. There was no question in the Buffalo Sabres, more than anybody, need forwards and need goals. And they took Owen Power and became what we saw from the World Championships. He was by far the best player to take at number one.
Well, the Toronto Maple Leafs' four highest paid players are all forwards. And how's that working out?
Well, they're getting to the playoffs. Is it a problem with the way the league goes? Look at McDavid. You know, but
we had this conversation with Gary Bettman, a week or so ago.
It's a different game. It is.
The game changes in the playoffs, and it's not just the way teams play. It's the way it's officiated and the way it's expected to be conducted. And those talents, for the most part, are mitigated in the postseason. And the most important players by design or by execution are goaltenders and then your defense as kind of a unit.
Yep.
And
You're right.
Imagine if the NBA called no fouls against Kawhi Leonard when the Raptors were going on their championship run. He was at the line all the time. He's a star player. He gets calls.
Mind you, there are lots of NBA cities that are complaining about the officiating every game too. Sure. So,
you know, the star players don't get calls in hockey in the playoffs. It's the bottom line. They can deny all they want, and that's why the star forwards are neutralized and haven't won a lot of playoff series.
There you go. We can go around and round.
No, one more question.
I'm sorry. John always has an extra question.
Well, yeah, just to bug you. So
you're being successful at it.
Thank you. Welcome. Finally, I have some success. So the next time both of you are on, I suspect we'll be closer to the start of the season. You two live in American cities where there's, I think, a lot more attention paid to the Olympics at times. How important is it for the NHL to go to the Olympics, Scotty?
Oh, I mean, I think it's important, but I'm biased. I'm lucky enough. I've covered three of them. Some of the greatest hockey moments I'll ever be part of as a working journalist. So I think it's critical. And I think it's really important after COVID. I think it's really important after missing in 2018 in South Korea. Whether it's, Jack Eichel, Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, go down the list, Patrick Laine, all of the generation of the game's emerging great young players have never had this opportunity. And I think fans will warm to it. I think it's important. I know the owners hate it because it's hard to quantify the success. I think it's really important. I have no doubt that it's going to happen now. I think, the fact that they have muddled through Tokyo, and even though the IOC continues to be one of the worst partners you could ever want in an endeavor like this for the NHL and the NHLPA, I think Beijing will be a smashing success. They're going to play in an NHL-style rink. I think the hockey will be outstanding. And I think there are four or five teams that you can legitimately make a case to win gold. I can't wait.
Mike?
I hate it. I hate the Olympics. The players want to go. The NHL should let them go. They should go. You do market the game. But I don't like all the pros in the Olympics. I don't watch tennis and basketball much. Hockey, I don't watch much. It's great hockey. There's no question about it. But here's my point. And this is why owners hate it. And I kind of like watching hockey games. You shut your season down for 3 weeks just when the NFL's finished. And now all of a sudden there's no hockey. There's hockey on TV at the Olympics in China at 6 a.m. or whatever time it's going to be on. I hate it. I wish they wouldn't go. The players want to go. That should matter. I fully expect them to go.
You know what, Mike, though? I will say it gives the Buffalo Sabres fans a huge break, though. That's an important thing. They're going to need that three-week break.
The schedule came out. They have road trips on each side. This is not good for anybody in any market, good or bad. The Buffalo Sabres do not have a home game this year from January 22nd to March 4th. Now, that might be a good thing for their fans, but that's not good for any market. It's terrible. It's a big problem.
The correct answer, by the way, is on the importance of NHL players playing in the Olympics is zero. It is the least. Not only is it not important, it diminishes the significance of the National Hockey League. And I'll take a second to explain this. You give a hockey fan the opportunity to watch the, how many play in the
150.
150. You give me the best 150 players over an extended period of time. Okay, that can be pretty entertaining. What's the comparison when the NHL starts up again? It ain't the 150 best players. It's the 700 best players, or however many there are. And the quality of the games are nowhere near what the Olympics are. So by comparison, it makes the NHL look bad. And the NHL gets almost nothing out of it. And we know this only because if they did, Bettman would be riding his horse at the head of the line to get them there. Mm-hmm. Economically, it means nothing. Expansion of the game, international interest in the game. They've tried it. They demonstrated it doesn't mean a damn thing. And now it's only a gift to the Players Association because these players want to go. I get they want to go. Impact, zero. Importance, less than zero. Makes your regular season look bad. Even makes the playoffs look bad. Because the quality of play is never as good as it is in an Olympic Games when you put the best of the best together. Just an opinion. I'm filled with them. I've also been told I'm full of a lot of other things.
We'll get a second opinion on that. So.
Harrington, Burnside, we love you. We wish you a happy August. I know Shannon will be trying to get you back on as soon as the first puck drops in the first preseason game.
Yeah, baby.
I expect not to be too far away from you for too long. But nonetheless, we always thank you, and we enjoy the conversation. All the best.
Kevin. All good.
We'll take the break. We'll come back after these messages. Well, again, our thanks to Mr. Burnside and Harrington for being with us on the program. And we'll put hockey to bed, I hope, for a month or so, because I'm running out of things to talk about. But then again, something could happen in the middle of August.
You never know. Well, I mean, we are going to, I do think, Bob, in the next, 3 weeks, we're going to get an Olympic decision. It's going to be a debatable topic, even though you have already seemed to have decided. You and the commissioner seem to be on the same side, which is something that's rather interesting.
Well, the fact that he's on this side is only means that he supports my view, not the other way around.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now,
but yeah.
Having said all this, another event occurred this morning as we were recording this program, and that was the women's final in the Olympic soccer tournament.
Yes.
And my disinterest in soccer, generally speaking, prevails. I have watched almost none of the Olympic soccer, a few minutes and some highlights. But like anybody who lives in this country, you got to get excited when the opportunity to win a gold medal comes along, and especially in a sport where it's never happened before.
Well, and I think it's compounded, Bob, for the women's team, is they had to defeat Godzilla to get to the final. I say Godzilla 100%. because it's Tokyo and it's Japan.
It's the whole story, really.
Right. And so when they beat the American team to face Sweden in the gold medal game, you wondered if they had enough left.
Well, I think I said to you earlier when we were chatting, like, I mean, the gold medal game for Canada was the U.S. That was the game that they had to win. They wanted to win. They hadn't beat the U.S. team in 20 years.
Fourth time in 64 games. Fourth time in 64 matches.
And we are conditioned to think that if you have that bar that comes before the final, when you get to the final, it's really difficult to muster up enough enthusiasm, energy, whatever, to prevail again. But, and you know, there is no stupider thing than a soccer game ending in penalty kicks. But it worked for Canada today.
Yep, six rounds.
Six rounds, Canada wins 3-2 in kicks after tying the in regulation time 1-1. They fell behind pretty early, too.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you what, the ice water in the veins of a couple of these young Canadian women, spectacular. Fleming, who had the penalty kick in regular time, and then Grasso, who had the sixth round kick to win. Boy, oh boy, that's admirable stuff.
Well,
And here, the other thing is, this is probably the end of Christine Sinclair's international.
Well, I was going to go there too.
And yeah. For her to win a gold medal, it's emotional.
Well, I can't think like, look, I'm happy for them, but I'm mostly happy for Ms. Sinclair, who has been the face of women's soccer in this country for a decade and a half.
Oh, yeah.
And to finally achieve this extraordinary success, nobody's more deserving than she is. Yeah. And I think you're suggesting, you'll be shocked, she's not a young girl anymore. I'm a little surprised she's still playing. I'm glad she's still playing now. But I think this is the perfect time for her to say goodbye.
This is such a great sport for young people to play. It's easy to play. You have to wonder the impact of this game today. Will it help grow the game? I'm sure it will. Will this be the golden goal? And then the discussion of where were you on that Friday at the Tokyo Olympics watching soccer? Like many people were watching Sydney score the goal in Vancouver in February of 2010. I do think that this will have a huge impact on the sport and the growth of the sport in our country. And I think that's a positive.
Well, it'll have a an impact undoubtedly on in women playing the game. What is really interesting is that I don't know whether winning an Olympic gold medal automatically elevates the Canadian women's team to number one in the world, but they're in that conversation.
They have been for a while. They've always been in the top four, right?
Yeah. So they're in the conversation for being number one in the world. And our men's team is, I don't know, 60th, 70th in the world, you know, can barely win an inter-squad game. With no disrespect intended.
Well, and look who's taken on that challenge. The guy who actually built the women's program so well, John Erdman.
I know.
Is now in charge of the men's program, and it's an uphill battle.
Well, it's kind of curious, isn't it? And maybe we'll talk a bit about this on next week. In our post-Olympics analysis. You know, because Mary Ormsby is going to join us.
Yeah.
And clearly our female athletes have had more success than our male athletes. And that was simply enhanced today by the women's soccer team winning a gold medal.
Yeah. That was exciting stuff, man. Exciting stuff.
Well, y'all have, we thank you for joining us. And
well, tell them who's on Monday. Come on now.
A golfer.
Yeah. An Olympian.
Oh yeah. An Olympic golfer. Yeah. Mackenzie Hughes is going to join us on Monday. And then Tuesday, Mary Ormsby of the Toronto Star.
Yep.
Will be with us for kind of, as I said, an Olympic wrap-up, look back, and some analysis of why our women are doing better than our men. But in the meantime, you got a couple days off. Enjoy it, and then we'll be back in your ear on Monday of next week. Have a nice weekend, Shannon.
Thank you, Robert. You too.
We'll see you Monday. Goodbye, everybody.